This is the Arab Street Podcast, and I'm Ray Hanania. For more information on my writings, visit thedailyhookah.com or hanania.com. And for podcasts, visit thearabstreet.org. I hope you enjoy the program. And good morning, everybody. I'm Ray Hanania, and it's Friday, December 14, 2018, and you're listening to the Arab Street Radio and Podcast broadcast from Chicago through 690 AM WNZK Radio based in Detroit, Michigan. We'll be taking your calls a little bit later at 248-557-3300. If you want information on the show, you can go to my website at hanania.com or thearabstreet.org. Our guest this morning is Ali Younis, a professional journalist and writer for Al Jazeera. And we're going to be talking about a couple issues with him during the first half of the show. He's going to be with us. The continued saga of the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. It just doesn't, you know, there's no ending. It just gets worse and worse as you hear more and more details. The explosion of violence in the West Bank and how it's treated so unfairly by the American and mainstream media. The Israelis can kill all kinds of Palestinians all the time and in any circumstance, and nobody cares. But when the Palestinians kill an Israeli, it becomes the focus of a news media frenzy and Israel's propaganda. They spend millions to make sure that you only think that it's Israelis who are suffering. We might also look, if we have time, into the Mueller probe of the Trump administration. And later on, I'll be talking about the BDS, the anti-BDS movement here in the U.S. 26 U.S. states have passed laws to punish you, to deny you your rights, your constitutional rights to free speech, to criticize a foreign country. Governor of Illinois, who was just defeated in the election, has just instructed the state to sanction Airbnb for refusing to list the illegal Israeli settlements on its rental system that it uses for tourists if they're located in the West Bank. Our radio show call-in number again is 248-557-3300. Our website, thearabstreet.org. Ali, welcome to the show this morning.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you for having me again. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, we love it. Listen, there aren't a lot of journalists, one, who are as good in English as you are, okay, from the Middle East. And two, you actually write news stories. You know, I'm an opinion writer. I don't write news stories. I express my opinion. But you actually write news stories. Tell us about some of the big news stories you've been covering over the last few weeks since we had you on last time.
Well, I do investigative news stories. Those kind of stories that I do that depends on original sources, my contacts and connections in the Middle East and the U.S. at the same time. But some of the big stories that I have covered, it has to do with Syria, what's going on with the terrorism, with extremism, and the relation, the stability of Syria and the stability of Syria and its connection to Iraq, and overall the regional stability. Iran, the Gulf region, and Syria and Jordan. I also covered the big crisis in Jordan of the floods that happened in Jordan. Also, I covered, for example, Jordanian government has named one of its special forces brigades after the UAE Crown Prince Mohammed bin Zayed, which made the big news in Jordan. Of course, in exchange of money, that's what people are saying. $100 million, you know.
That's a lot. You know, in America, they only pay maybe $50,000, you know, to get what they want in government. But in the Middle East, $150 million.
You know, you don't name your special forces units after a foreign leader, you know. But that
happened. Well, for $150 million, I would name my radio show after the UAE if they wanted to do that. Yeah, I'd do it.
I would too.
Yeah, who wouldn't, right? But it shows you the extremes that the Middle East goes through, right? I mean, they're incompetent when it comes to standing up for their rights, and yet they have all this money that they can just throw around, you know, to help people or help institutions or, and sometimes just even building alliances, right? What do they get for the $150 million besides the name of the unit?
When it comes to issues of human rights, civil liberties in this region, there's no money from the governments. But when it comes to spending on weapons, spending on intelligence gathering, spending on investment in foreign countries, you throw hundreds of billions of dollars into foreign countries, but not in your country.
But isn't it pretty pathetic that, you're right, I mean, that when it comes to human rights, they don't spend any money, but when it comes to arms and stuff, they spend a fortune, and yet they're the worst when it comes to using those weapons. They can't even defend themselves. So it's like they're wasting their money buying guns that they're incompetent and can't even use. People abuse them, the Arab world, all the time, and it's like they're defenseless. They can't do anything.
You know, I could tell you some examples from the past that your readers may, you know, relate to and know about. The wars against Israel, 1948, 67, 73, and later on. All these wars, Arab have lost. You know, they were routed. You know, they had a lot of the best Soviet and Russian weapons, yet they were defeated by Israelis. You know, it's not the Arab soldier was bad in him as a person,
right?
But lack of training, lack of political will,
right?
And because these armies were political armies, they were designed not to defend the homeland or the country, but rather the regime or the royal family.
To defend the regime and to defend
the war
monarchies.
Yes, and look at the war Saudi Arabia is waging against Yemen. Yemen and the Houthis, you know, ragtag militias. You know, they have a lot of weapons, but nevertheless,
and they can't win.
They're not a regular army. You know, for 3 years, they can't even make a dent.
Well, the worst part...
They can't even defeat them.
Well, the worst part of the...
Saudi Arabia spends 8% of its GDP, which is over $400 billion. They spend billions of dollars. They cannot use it, and they cannot win a war against Yemen, the poorest Arab country.
Yes, but one of the worst parts about the war in Yemen is not that the war isn't justified. It's the conduct of the war, the accusations that civilians are being targeted, that women and children are, you know, suffering. I mean, that's the worst part, because Yemen is a very radical and extremist area. I mean, the bin Laden family originates from Yemen. You know, Osama bin Laden originally was a Yemenite who got Saudi citizenship. So, and that there are a lot of Al-Qaeda and terrorist forces there, but targeting civilians to get to them, it seems that there should be a more, you know, a moral war, right? The way you conduct the war. You don't just kill civilians.
Yeah, I just want to say, the war in Yemen did not start because the Saudis and the Emiratis and the Gulf and Qatar participated initially, and Jordan participated as well, and Sudan participated. It was not a war to drive out Al-Qaeda in Yemen. You know, it's called Al-Qaeda in Yemen. No, it was a war after the fall of the Ali Abdullah Saleh regime.
Right.
There was a lot of movement among the Yemeni people, have a new leadership, and these countries did not want the Houthis to take over or a government to take over that they are opposed to.
Right.
It has nothing to do with terrorism. Nevertheless, they are fighting terrorism in there, but they are committing, like you said, huge atrocities, killing scores, thousands of Yemeni civilians, you know, targeting point blank. I mean, these, you know, attacks on Yemeni civilians are war crimes, but you didn't hear a lot of noise on it. Only recently seen the U.S. Congress is saying
Of
Khashoggi's case.
Yeah, we do hear it from the U.S. Congress, you know, and, you know, they're big.
Only recently.
Right, and the U.S. Congress is big when they want to condemn, you know, Arab violence against civilians, but they're silent when it comes to Israeli violence against Palestinians.
That's true.
You know, along the Gaza Strip. And I don't want to detour away from Yemen because I think it's important. But aren't there two forces, you know, in Yemen that were fighting with each other? And it happened that the Saudis sided with one side. And, you know, I mean, the war itself, I think you could argue whether it's good or bad. But I totally agree that when you conduct a war, you really have to be careful about the impact on civilians, and it doesn't seem that there have been any protections. It seems like most of the violence we've seen in the media has been directed at civilians. And that's horrible. The suffering among civilians
and
is terrible.
To be fair, also the U.S. war in Afghanistan, U.S. war in Iraq,
right?
Israeli war against Gaza in 2014,
right.
2008.
How do the Saudis differ from the United States? I mean, we went into Iraq, committed war
not
crimes.
Much.
Right,
not
it
much.
Doesn't. But, you know, we just don't hear about it. You don't hear Nikki Haley screaming about American soldiers that massacre, you know, 24 civilians at an Iraqi wedding. You know, they go in and they shoot everybody up and they go, uh-oh, we made a mistake. Oh, well, let's move on to the next Iraqi house.
But the difference is that you don't see U.S. media try to cover up, you know, in a way, the way Arab media try to cover up for their regimes, you know.
Yes.
U.S. media is still free media. They could always talk about.
Well, let's say somewhat free. You're right. They're a little more free. I don't want to say, I hate to use the word the American media is free, because in reality, here in the United States, if you want to criticize, populist issues like Israel, and I use Israel as an example, there's several others, but you want to criticize Israel, you will take a beating. You will lose work. You'll be defamed. You'll be ostracized. You'll be slandered. You'll be excluded. You'll be denied, you know, constitutional rights and funding. As a taxpayer, you can't even get money for your issues. So there is the West is much more sophisticated in how they, you know, censor the media than the Arab world. We do it in the Arab world brutally, right? But in the United States, they're more sophisticated.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's not a matter of principle. It's a matter of delivery and how you present your peace and how you present your war.
So why don't the Arabs just wake up? Why don't they just wake up? They got so much money. What stops them from implementing one of the most sophisticated PR campaigns in the world? Because they can change minds. It's proven. It can be done. Why don't they do that?
They do. In Washington, D.C., Arab governments
spend worthless
hundreds of billions of dollars
worthlessly
to promote themselves.
Yes, to promote themselves, not to
promote the regime, to make sure.
To...
I remember Iyad Alawi, former Iraqi prime minister after 2003 war in Iraq that deposed the former regime of Saddam Hussein. Iyad Alawi said, and I remember him saying that. He said, you don't need constituency in Baghdad to be prime minister of Iraq. You need a constituency in Washington, D.C.
Right.
He said it.
Right.
He hired a law firm in New York to plug him in with Washington, you know, wheelers and dealers, the powerful, and he became a prime minister. So this is the mindset in the Arab regime that they could care less about the population, about their people, about the welfare of their people. They care about the constituency in Washington, D.C. It's another word, like the way I see it, when the Arabs were under the Ottoman Empire, the Sultan was in Istanbul. Everybody went to the Sultan in Istanbul.
Right.
Now I see Trump is the new Sultan in Washington, D.C. Everybody wants to please Trump and throw billions of dollars at Trump or Washington, whoever, or Obama or whoever.
Well,
and just to make sure that I stay in power and control my people and deprive them of civil liberties or rights or prosperity, you know, and to have a decent life. And that's endemic across the region, you know, say for a few examples. But, you know, when you call for democracy or human rights in this region, in the Arab world, you automatically become an extremist or a terrorist or anti-regime or an enemy of a state, and you end up being in jail.
And that includes
free media.
That includes every country, the Arab countries and Israel, because they do
That's true.
Exact same thing. Everybody,
and the Palestinians, too, the West Bank, the Mahmoud Abbas regime.
Well, and Hamas. I mean, let's be honest.
Hamas does the same thing.
Why does Hamas get off the hook when they crack down on people or when they arrest or punish people or they brutalize women who don't want to wear a hijab when they do TV shows or news reporting? They're brutalized.
Wait, isn't that a little bit inaccurate?
No, it isn't. There are several women who have said that they've been attacked. You know, they've been bullied and they've been threatened because they don't want to wear a hijab when they do their TV reporting. I've seen
I don't know. Maybe there's examples, but I don't think Hamas. You know, look, the Muslim Brotherhood in the Middle East, they're not ISIS. They're not Al Qaeda. They are, because I cover ISIS, and I have, as I mentioned before, I have a story coming up at the Intercept about these things. these Muslim Brotherhood groups, whether in Egypt or Hamas or in Jordan, they're not extremist in a sense on a social level.
Well, they're okay? not as extreme as, you know, Al-Qaeda or ISIS. But come on.
Yeah,
anybody
maybe,
that
okay.
advocates a religious movement so, over democracy, you can't have democracy with religion.
Right. And in the Levant region, you know, the people are diverse. There's, you know, in Jordan, Palestine, Syria, Lebanon, Christians are and were an integral part of the society. They are, you know, homegrown. They are part of the social fabric.
Yep.
And so diversity has always been for millennials. Been there in this region. So it's very hard to bring a Muslim Brotherhood group to force the people to become extremist or call it an Islamic emirate. Gaza, I see when I see TV footage, when even I talk to journalists, I see some women, they don't cover
yes.
their hair. And this
it's
is
true.
Not, this
some
is not
don't.
A litmus test.
Some covering don't, but hair, but there is.
Covering hair does not mean that I am not a Muslim. There's still these women who don't cover their hair. They're still maybe conservative. Have conservative values, whether
right?
Christians
but I,
or
why is it? Why is it that we? And you know, a lot of Arabs do this. They go to great lengths to defend Hamas, but they won't defend these Arab countries. I don't understand it. Listen, hang on one second, Ali. We're going to continue with this great discussion sure. with my guest, Ali Younis, a journalist and writer for Al Jazeera English, and we're talking about the way the Middle East is perceived, the violence in the Middle East. The war in Yemen. We're going to try to talk a little bit about the murder, the horrendous, cruel killing of Jamal Khashoggi and the actions that the U.S. took against Saudi Arabia and the violence escalating in the West Bank. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue the discussion with Ali Younis, journalist and writer for Al Jazeera English. I'm Ray Hanania. We'll be right back right after these messages.
Life is a nonprofit charity that's provided humanitarian aid and development to people and communities for over 25 years, regardless of race, color, religion, or cultural background. When disaster occurs here or around the world, Life for Relief and Development rushes in to provide food, medical aid, and shelter to those in need. Please help improve these efforts. Make your tax-deductible donation to Life now at lifeusa.org or call 248-424-7493.
Gashat's Mediterranean Market and Shish Kebab offers a great array of your favorite Mediterranean meals. Meals range from lamb specialties, shawarma sandwiches, seafood dinners, and they offer special big trays of your fair food, plus much more. Gashat's Mediterranean Market and Shish Kebab address is 32839 Northwestern Highway in Farmington Hills. Their phone number is 248-538-9552. That number again is 248-538-9552. And the supermarket is open from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Gashat's Mediterranean Market and Shish Kebab will definitely leave you satisfied.
مركز IVF ميشيغان للخصوبة وأطفال الأنابيب الرواد في مجال الطب التناسلي تعلن عن استقبال مراجعيها في بلومفيلد هيلز ومراكزها المنتشرة في ميشيغان وأوهايو حيث يتواجد أمهر الأخصائيين لتقديم الاستشارات في جميع مجالات التلقيح الصناعي يعتبر الدكتور نيكولاس شاما أحد أهم الأخصائيين في الغدد الصماء التناسلية في ولايتي ميشيغان وأوهايو حيث أجرى أكثر من 10,000 عملية طفل أنبوب وساعد الآلاف من الأزواج على تحقيق حلم الأبوة يحمل الدكتور شما شهادة البورد الأمريكي في كل من أمراض النساء والتوليد أمراض الغدد الصماء التناسلية والعقم رعاية طبية ممتازة وتفهم عميق للأثر العاطفي والنفسي لحالة العقم للاستفسار اتصلوا على 248-952-9600 248-952-9600
And welcome back to the Arab Street Radio. I'm Ray Hanania. We do a live radio show here and we podcast it. So if you're just tuning in, you can still catch the podcast by visiting iTunes or by visiting my website at thearabstreet.org or hanania.com. On the line with me is Ali Younis, a journalist and writer for Al Jazeera English. He's in the Middle East, and technology allows us to bring him to us because people, especially in America, don't get to hear the Arab side, Arab perspective of what's really happening. the violence in the Middle East, Ali, has really dramatically taken a very difficult turn. What's happening there? What's the issue?
Well, two Israeli soldiers got killed this weekend. And they call them settlers as well, by Palestinians. And this is not the, obviously, this is the start of an ongoing, much more militarized violence by Israel. But, you know, Israel has been always conducting, you know, raids into the West Bank, arresting people, search and seizures, closure of the West Bank, and in addition to the blockade against Gaza, sea and air and land. So Palestinians feel a chokehold when they are in the West Bank, and they resent this invasive Israeli occupation that, despite there is a Palestinian Authority in the West Bank and in Ramallah, but a standing agreement between Israel and the Palestinians, the Palestinian Authority, the PA, that whenever Israeli soldiers go into Ramallah or Nablus or Jenin, per the agreement, the Palestinian police have to stand down. They have to put their weapons down, maybe walk away and behave as if this is not their territory that they were policing or manning an hour ago. So Israel has supremacy. This is where it starts, I think, the genesis of violence that propels the Palestinians to commit acts of violence against Israelis. And in return, Israelis commit greater violence, you know, much more collective violence, not against the shooter
right.
or the shooters, but against their families, against the whole town.
And innocent civilians.
Collective
yeah.
punishment.
Yeah,
and
they
civilians,
do.
Other civilians.
And you know what, the interesting thing, I blame the news media for empowering Israel's terrorism. I think the news media disguises Israel's violence and terrorism and makes it look like it's in defense or in response to something. They also are manipulative of facts. For example, when they talk about settlers, they don't point out that these settlers are armed to the teeth, that they teach their kids how to fire weapons, that they promote hatred of Christians and Muslims, you know, in their schools. These settlers are terrorists, and the mainstream media defends and protects them. So when an Israeli settler kills a Palestinian, as they do all the time, some 200-plus Palestinians have been killed along the Gaza border. They're 300 yards from the border, and the Israeli soldiers on the Israeli side of the border have to use sniper, high-powered sniper rifles to hit them because they're so far away. There's no chance that any of those protesters in Gaza can throw a Molotov cocktail 300 yards over to reach the border fence. Not even the greatest football player in America can throw a football more than 100 yards, right? So that's
right.
But the media presents it like, oh, you know, those protesters, they're threatening and they're going to kill Israelis. And then yet the reality is that the Israelis kill the protesters, 200 plus, and they do the same in the West Bank.
And you know what helps this narrative to be dominant narrative in the media and in global media is the lack of Arab media and the Arab government response.
Yeah, we don't. You know, right, you're right. What do we do as an Arab media
exactly.
and Arab governments? We
exactly.
just sit there twiddling our thumbs, counting our money, and taking grants, you know, from everybody to just pat each other on the back. It's really kind of discouraging, isn't it? No wonder the Israelis get away with all this.
And Israel could get away with this because Arab governments, they don't care one bit about the Palestinians. Jordan doesn't care. Jordan just gave a lip service to the Palestinians. So
yeah.
does Egypt. They have two formal treaties. And they just condemn this, condemn that. But it's always business and as usual. They could care less about the Palestinian plight. And I believe also the Palestinian Authority could care less about the fate of their own people. So
I'm going to throw in that Hamas could care less about
yes,
their own
people. Yes, you can. You'll
too.
Be my guest through Hamas, jihad, whatever.
But it's true. It's across the board.
Remember,
it's almost like inherent.
Yeah. Remember when Netanyahu went to visit Oman, you know, last month?
That was obscene. That they even allowed him to enter the country.
You know, look, This you know, Oman has been going on, ties between Oman and Israel in the past year and a half.
Yes.
The foreign minister of Oman visited Israel. There's a lot of contacts there. And Bahrain is following step. And you know what? We're fine. Oman is a sovereign country. They could have relations with Satan if they want to. I don't care about it. Okay?
Right.
But why do they say, we've met Netanyahu, we invited Netanyahu over to talk about Middle East peace?
Yeah.
Oman has never, ever said anything about the Palestinians
yeah.
or done anything to help the Palestinians.
Yeah, that's because the United States is giving Oman money. And the United States, you know, leverages money to Saudi Arabia, to Jordan, to Oman, to all these countries in the Arab world. You can't get the money if you actually stand up to Israel. They don't need the money, though, right? Do they?
Yeah, UAE. Bahrain is following Oman and UAE, Saudi Arabia. They all have extensive, and this is not a secret I'm saying.
Right.
The Israelis have admitted that
right.
and said that they have excellent ties with all the Gulf region. The Saudis,
yes.
The Emiratis, the Bahrainis, the Omanis, just to name a few, you know, and why should Israel care about the Palestinians? They could kill the Palestinians all day long.
Right.
No one will say anything. Egypt will never say anything. Jordan will never say anything of substance. And the Gulf, they don't want anything. They are happy to buy spying software from Israel and Israeli expertise. Chad, and I wrote a story about it, the president of Chad, Idris Deby, just visited Israel last month to reestablish the diplomatic ties. He did not even tell his own people. I interviewed people in Chad. People of Chad knew about the visit, by the way, from the Israeli media.
Yeah.
That's it.
I think, again, we come back to what's the real problem. It's the media that provides cover. You know, the media, and I think it's the mainstream American media. I think the mainstream American media is corrupt not just about everything. I mean, I think they do great jobs in covering every other story. But when it comes to the story of the Middle East and Israel and the Arab world, they're totally bought and paid for and owned, and they're corrupt, principled. You know, they're unprincipled. There are some great journalists. I mean, like at The Intercept is a great place.
New York Times.
Yeah. Some of the New York Times. I think they play a game over there. But, yeah, they're a little better. It's a relative thing. But they could do more. But they don't. And I think the media is the problem. And the fact that the Arab world doesn't invest in a stronger media and a stronger PR strategy to confront the U.S. media, not just, you know, to support Al Jazeera English or the Arab News, you know, or media, you know, the Middle East Monitor where I write, you know, for both of those, the Arab News and Middle East Monitor, you know, they're not really supporting them. They should, but they need to, you know, engage in a very powerful PR strategy to confront the lies that are published in the U.S. media.
They're not interested.
Yeah, that's very frustrating.
Yeah, they're not interested because I tell you something. You don't read Arabic, but I do. I open any Arabic website, okay? The vast majority of its news, global news, even about this region, is a translation from the New York Times, from the Intercept, from Washington Post, from Wall Street Journal,
right.
from
BBC, right.
from The Guardian.
Yeah.
So the news comes from the West about us, okay?
Sure.
We take the Western version about us.
Yeah,
okay.
And we allow them to broadcast, like CNN broadcasts all over the Middle East, and we didn't even care that they fired one of their commentators because he said a few words that the Israelis didn't like, and they attacked him and dismissed him.
You think that Abu Dhabi will care about firing Mark Lamont? They don't care.
Nobody cares. They should care.
With CNN.
They should. You're right.
To be quite honest with you, I have no faith in Arab governments. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm a journalist. I write what's on my mind.
Right.
I believe in that I, as a journalist, I am the eyes and ears of the public. You have to have ethics. People trust your expertise. People trust your decisions and your values, and you have to stand up for these and be honest with the public. Don't, you know, try to lie to them or toe the line of one government or that government. The sad thing also is almost all of the Arab media is either owned by the Saudis or the Qataris or the Emiratis. Okay. Right. So if you work, all Arab journalists work in one of these governments.
Right.
So if you work for a government, for a Saudi publication, you have just to sing the praises of King Salman and the Crown Prince. If you work for Al Jazeera, owned by Qatar, not quite. They don't sing the praises of the Emir, but they are a bit different. They also strategically, they are owned by Qatar.
I get it. Listen, so every country has influence. Listen, they do that here in the United States. Believe me, the media is controlled by big business. Five big corporations control all the media in this country, and there's certain things you can do and many things you can't do. And one of the things is you can't criticize Israel. As we see across the United States, these laws that violate the U.S. Constitution, the anti-BDS laws. Listen, we're at the bottom of the hour, and I want to give you a chance. Is there anything you want to say, and where can people go to read your columns? Because I know that you can't stand for the whole show.
Yes. They could read my columns at Al Jazeera English, aljazeera.com. They could just search my name and find me, Ali Younis. See all my articles. And aljazeera.com, that's my primary news outlet. But at the same time, I also write for the New York Times and The Intercept and other, U.S.-based media. I do joint investigations with them on the Middle East most of the time and also on the U.S. I cover Khashoggi case, and I wish I have time to talk about it, about the U.S. sanctions of the Saudis, of the Saudi Crown Prince over the Khashoggi killing.
Is it going to make a difference, do you think? Before I let you go, is it going to be powerful enough to make change, or is it just a slap on the hand that hurts, but a little more than a slap on the hand?
I think it's a symbolic move because as long as Trump believes in Mohammed bin Salman has to stay in power,
right.
And Jared Kushner, my sources there in the White House tell me that the office of the vice president is against what's going on, but the Jared Kushner and Trump alone are pushing for Mohammed bin Salman. But I'll tell you something. Mohammed bin Salman or Ali bin Salman or Ray bin Salman, whoever is the king of Saudi Arabia, as long as from the House of Saud, they will always be on the side of America and be pro-America and do whatever America wants them to be.
And the irony of that is Americans don't appreciate them, all that they do for us, because I'm paying $1.89 a gallon for gasoline this week in the United States. And a year ago, it was almost $3.40 a gallon. And I think it has a lot to do with the Saudis. Ali, listen, thank you so much for joining us again. We look forward to bringing you on the radio show, talking about these issues again. And let's stay in touch, okay?
Thank you, Ray. I appreciate it.
All right. That was Ali Younis, journalist and writer for Al Jazeera English. You can go to Al Jazeera English and pick up on his writings, reports, and also The Intercept, which is a great publication, and The New York Times. So we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, if you want to call in at 248-557-3300, we will take phone calls at 248-557-3300. I'm Ray Hanania, and we're going to be right back right after these messages.
The Rama Relief Foundation provides humanitarian aid into areas inside of war-torn Syria, as well as aid to the refugees who have fled to the neighboring countries in the Middle East. The foundation offers food baskets, container shipment, mental health, education, soup kitchens, and more. Go to ramarelief.org or call 248-990-4247. Any donation amount made to Rama will go to sustaining many lives. Call now 248-990-4247.
It's all in one grocery store, and that store is Zamzam Fresh Foods Market. Zamzam Fresh Foods Market offers fresh vegetables, halal meats, a great fresh bakery, as well as nuts and spices and much more. They also offer special deals every Wednesday, so don't forget to ask for your favorite foods, as shish kebabs are ready to go. So please stop by Zamzam Fresh Foods Market at 24065 Orchard Lake Road in Farmington Hills. Their phone number is 248-476-0300. Again, that phone number is 248-476-0300, and they are open from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Zamzam Fresh Foods Market is your one-place stop for all your grocery shopping needs and your favorite foods.
When you're looking for the best in optical care, Dr. Imad Nakash is your doctor to see. With years of experience and thousands of successful procedures performed, you can trust your eyes to Dr. Imad Nakash. See Dr. Imad Nakash and his professional staff for your eye care needs. There's two locations to serve you. In Hazel Park, call 248-336-3937. 248-336-3937. In Rochester Hills, call 248-299-3937. That's 248-299-3937.
Ziad Brand. Quality products from our family to yours. Ziad Brothers Importing offers the finest quality products, including brands like Sultan, Kraft, Nestle, Hook, Rico Picon, Donna, and many more. Ask your retailer to carry these fine products because you deserve the very best. For more information, visit our website at www.ziad.com. That's www.ziad.com. Ziad, quality products from our family to yours.
And welcome back to the Arab Street Radio and Podcast. I'm Ray Hanania. We just got through talking with reporter and journalist Ali Younis, who writes for Al Jazeera English, The Intercept, The New York Times, and a lot of other publications. And we kind of covered a lot of stuff. The hypocrisy of the media, the hypocrisy of the coverage of, you know, Israel's violence targeting civilians, and how nobody cares until an Israeli is killed. And, of course, we don't want to see anybody killed. I don't want to see any Israelis killed, but I also don't want to see any Palestinians killed. And you can't scream about Israelis being killed if you don't scream about Palestinians being killed. That's the hypocrisy. The mainstream American media only focuses on one side. They only really focus when an Israeli gets killed. And half the time, these settlers, most of them are terrorists. They're violent. They're armed to the teeth. They teach their children hatred. These settlements across the West Bank, and they're racist. They're Jewish only. If you're Christian or Muslim, there's no Christian settlement. There's no Muslim settlement. Israel doesn't care about Christians or Muslims. They only care about one religion, and they discriminate against the rest of us. So when one of these settlers is killed, they don't point out that these settlers are either soldiers or that they've engaged in violence against Palestinian civilians. They're destroying olive, you know, groves that belong to Palestinians. They're destroying properties that belong to Palestinians. Nobody reports on that. So when a Palestinian gets upset and he can't control his anger and goes out and attacks an Israeli, that becomes a story. And then as a result, Israel uses that to punish in a vicious way Palestinians. They not only, they arrested one of the alleged shooters of this couple, these settlers who were killed or who were injured. And I guess the wife lost the baby, which is sad. Nobody wants to celebrate that. I'm certainly not going to celebrate that. I don't want to see anybody injured. But when you're a settler and you steal land and you move onto that property, you know you're committing a crime, and yet you sit there and pretend like you're innocent. So they target people. They don't care about the law. They don't care about court. They go ahead and say he did it, this Palestinian, and they go ahead and they arrest him like Salah Barghouti. He was driving a taxi. They surrounded him. He raised up his hands. He stepped out of the car, and they grabbed him, and next thing we're told is he was killed. And I'm telling you that they're allowed vengeance and anger that no one else is allowed. The Israelis can murder anybody and get away with it in their minds, and that's the crime. That's the hypocrisy, and the mainstream American media is the real enemy. They're the enemy in this country that are promoting the violence in the Middle East and stopping peace. Our number is 248-557-3300. If you want to call in, we'd love to hear what you have to say about all this. The show, of course, if you didn't hear the whole show, is podcast on iTunes and also on my website at thearabstreet.org and Hanania.com. You can read my columns every week. I write a weekly column for the Arab News, which is in Saudi Arabia. And I also write a weekly column for Middle East Monitor, which is based in London. And both of those get huge sharing. I think a column I wrote last week, and remember, I'm not writing news stories. I'm telling you my opinion. I don't pretend that I'm, you know, objective. I'm objective in the sense that I tell you what I honestly believe based on the facts, and I'm going to keep doing it. It's my right to express my opinion, and I'm not going to stop. And you can go there. You could read any of these columns, opinion, op-ed columns that I write. Again, they're not news. But some of them get 2,000 shares. It's amazing, you know, how many people in the Middle East are interested in English language analysis and opinion about what's happening, you know, in the Middle East, because they're not getting it from the biased mainstream media. The firing of that one reporter by CNN, I mean, he went to the UN. He made a few comments that the Israelis didn't like. He talked about how there should be fair treatment, equal treatment for Christians, Muslims, and Jews in Israel, from, you know, the river to the sea. And the Israelis didn't like it. So they beat up on CNN. CNN didn't even blink before they fired the guy. They fired him immediately. He was an African-American. And they don't care. But if you're a critic of the Palestinians, if you're a racist, if you're biased, like Wolf Blitzer, I don't think he's objective. I think he's biased. He's a former Israeli, you know, news reporter and PR person, you know, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I do media and PR too. But what I am saying is know where these people come from. Wolf Blitzer is not objective. He's biased, and he's going to spin the truth to defend Israel, because that's what he did the entire time he was there. Let's switch over to the topic of BDS, boycott, divestment, and sanctions. Now, I have an issue with BDS, only in this sense. I don't support the BDS movement as it applies to Israel, that was founded in 1948. I do support the BDS movement as it applies to anything originating in the West Bank or occupied East Jerusalem. Those lands and properties and assets were stolen by the Israelis, given to these terrorist settlers, and they're exploited. And these settlers produce goods. And these settlers take things from Christians and Muslims and exploit them and profit from them. And the BDS movement is singling them out and urging you not to support that, boycotting the settlements, boycotting the West Bank. Now, some of the BDS activists believe that you can't just target the settlements and the West Bank. You have to target Israel too, because, in fact, Israel's government is a criminal enterprise under Benjamin Netanyahu, but it's a government. And as someone like myself who believes in peace based on two states, recognizing Israel, recognizing Palestine, I think that we need to be much more strategic about the BDS movement, because not being strategic has resulted in the BDS movement being successfully targeted here in the United States. 26 states have passed laws that punish you if you support the boycott of Israel. Not a boycott of the settlements as I do, but a boycott of Israel. And they don't distinguish between Israel or the settlements, because they are using the definition used by the BDS movement, the extreme part of the BDS movement, which doesn't distinguish between Israel and the West Bank. So these laws take that definition, which doesn't distinguish between Israel and the occupied West Bank, and says if you boycott that, then you are denied taxpayer investment, you can be denied contracts, you can be denied work, you can be, worse is that they defame you by slandering you and calling you anti-Semitic, as they're doing to Airbnb, which is that online service that allows people to post their homes and apartments online for rental, for tourism. A few weeks ago, last month, Airbnb announced that they were delisting settlements from using their service. And in fact, I understand they also delisted everybody under pressure from the West Bank, because it's occupied territory and its status hasn't been decided. So in response, the state of Illinois, for example, which passed one of the first anti-BDS violations of the U.S. Constitution in July 2015. Governor Rauner, that loser Republican who got booted out of office, he'll be leaving in a few days, and he's going to be replaced by J.B. Pritzker. J.B. Pritzker is a very pro-Israel activist here in the United States, and we're going to talk about him. But right now, let's take our last break here at the Arab Street Radio, and then when we come back, we'll continue talking about Illinois and the anti-BDS movement and what needs to be done to stop it. I'm Ray Hanania here at the Arab Street Radio. You're here at WNZK AM 690 Radio. Go to our website at thearabstreet.org or hanania.com. We'll be right back right after these messages.
انتهى الاجتماع ومحتارين هناكل فين؟
من الآخر وبدون تفكير أورشيد فودز أفضل وأحسن قرار.
عنده أكلات طيبة يا ترى؟
أورشيد فودز عنده أفضل تشكيلة من المحاشي والمشاوي والمقبلات والسلطات والفطائر، وكمان بتتسوق لكل احتياجات الجروسري والملحمة وغيره بأسعار خاصة بمناسبة الأعياد، والأحلى إنه بنفس المكان.
على ضمانتك أروح وأجرب.
ولو على ضمانت الشيف، وبجودة وخدمة ممتازة وسعر منافس، ولو عندك مناسبة خليها عليهم.
أورشيد فودز أند جروسري يقع على أورشيد ليك رود بين 12 و13 ميل في مدينة فارمينغتون هيلز. رقم الهاتف 248-516-3121.
وعلى رأي المثل لقمة هنية بتكفيني. هل ترغبون في الهجرة إلى أمريكا؟ هل لديكم طلب هجرة في الشرق الأوسط يحتاج إلى متابعة؟ مكاتب المحامي ستيفن لجانا بإمكانهم مساعدة الأشخاص الذين يواجهون تحديات تتعلق في الهجرة داخل أمريكا وفي بعض الدول التي تشهد نزاعات مثل العراق، سوريا واليمن. المحامي لجانا لديه خبرة أكثر من 28 سنة في قضايا لم أشمل الفيز بجميع أنواعها، الفيز التجارية، الاستثمار في أمريكا وقضايا الترحيل. للاستشارة المجانية تواصلوا على الرقم 617-283-1018 617-283-1018 وجميع أنحاء العالم على الواتساب 001-617-283-1018. إذا كنتم تحتاجون إلى مساعدة قانونية شاملة بما يتعلق في الهجرة إلى أمريكا، المحامي ستيفن لجانا هو العنوان. تعرفوا شيء؟ احنا كتير بنهتم بالمقبلات بالأكل الشامي،
واحنا بنهتم بالبهارات والتسبيكة في الأكل المصري،
واحنا نهتم هواية باللحوم وجودتها بالأكل العراقي، واحنا في مطعم عشتار نهتم بكم، اعتمدوا علينا. أيا كان، نحن في عشتار نعرف أن لكل مذاق أسرار، فنحن نقدم أجود أنواع اللحوم من ملحمة عشتار الواقعة على 56865 راين رود.
عشتار، قصة حضارة ترويها لكم أطباقنا المميزة في كل زيارة.
تفضلوا بزيارتنا في 3625 East 50 Mile Road Sterling Heights.
مطعم عشتار بإدارة فادي بهنام وعلي البغدادي. 586-698-2585.
Are you going to start a restaurant or grocery store soon? Do you need floor plans and designs? Call Najee Abood at 734-744-9796. Do you want to buy kitchen and restaurant equipment at discount prices? Call Najee Abood now, 734-744-9796. New Concept Products and Design, the trademark of kitchen equipment. 5% discount on all purchases of $75,000 or more. New Concept Products and Design, new location, 31185 Schoolcraft in Livonia. Learn more at www.newconceptproducts.com. Call Najee Abood, 734-744-9796.
And welcome back to the final segment of the Arab Street Radio and podcast, broadcast from Chicago through 690 AM WNZK Radio in Detroit, Michigan. Our phone number is 248-557-3300 if you want to join the conversation. You can listen to the podcast, the audio podcast of this show, later on today. It'll be posted on iTunes and also at the website, thearabstreet.org, thearabstreet.org. Or you can go to my website at hanania.com to find all the links to everything. It has a link to everything that I do, from the podcasts and the radio shows to all the columns at the Arab News newspaper, that one of the largest English language or leading English language newspapers in the Middle East, to the Middle East Monitor columns, which are based in London. I try to write an original column for each. So you will actually get different perspectives on different issues all the time. We were talking a little bit about the BDS movement here, in the anti-BDS movement and the effort. And so far, only 26 of 50 states, but that's a lot. That's a majority, have passed legislation to punish you if you use your U.S. constitutionally defended right to criticize a foreign country, only one, Israel. You can't boycott Israel. If you do that, you will be denied contracts in many states. If you do that, if you have a company, they cannot invest in you. So if you're in the stock market, they have to divest from your company and sell your stock. In Illinois, it's kind of a watered-down, weak anti-BDS law that basically says the pension funds can't invest money in any company that supports or refuses to, and this is how they get you, you have to sign a letter, a statement that says you do not boycott Israel. Imagine that. To do business in Illinois, you have to sign a statement in the state of Illinois that says you do not boycott the state of Israel. If you refuse to sign that, then any monies that might be invested in your company have to be divested and taken away from you. And those are taxpayer monies, and these companies are taxpayer-owned, and yet it's a foreign country that decides your fate. Well, this week, the state of Illinois announced that it was going to sanction Airbnb because Airbnb said that it was no longer going to allow properties in the occupied West Bank run by the illegal Israeli settlements from advertising their properties on Airbnb. Now, Airbnb is an online site where you go to, let's say you want to travel to Ramallah. You could go to Airbnb, type in Ramallah, and it'll show you all the private homes and apartments that you can rent to spend a week or two there as a tourist on vacation or on a business trip. And, you know, this is like all this online stuff that they do, Lyft, Uber, you know, all these things that it's the new way that people do stuff. So Airbnb said, you know what, we can't allow these settlements, because the settlements are built on stolen property, stolen from Christians and Muslims. And the United States is a Christian country, and I don't understand why the United States doesn't stand up for the rights of Christians in the Middle East at all. You know, they and it's not just Christians suffering, obviously, it's Muslims too. But I'm saying, listen, as a Christian, don't I have an obligation to support other Christians? If I'm Muslim, don't I have an obligation to support other Muslims? America's a Christian country. Why don't they support the Christians in the Middle East? Why do they allow Christians to be brutalized, discriminated against? That's what they allow. So this, in the state of Illinois, Governor Rauner, who this loser Republican governor who got beat in the last election in November 6th, this last month, he decided that he's going to sanction Airbnb, and he ordered the Illinois Finance Review Board to tell Airbnb that they either have to lift their decision or they will be denied all funding. And what that means by funding is that these pensions, and they're $14 billion in pensions in Illinois. It's not a small pension. They buy investments. They invest that money in all kinds of companies. They will take the money out of Airbnb, which I'm sure, you know, I don't know how much is in Airbnb, but the real issue isn't whether or not the state divesting from Airbnb will hurt Airbnb. The real issue is the slander and the defamation accusing Airbnb of being anti-Jewish, accusing Airbnb of being anti-Semitic. That's the thing that's destructive in this law. It's the label that they put on you. And then now people go out and say, oh, well, Airbnb is an anti-Semitic site. It's not. It really wants to do the right thing. And it really wants to follow the law. And these settlements are in violation of the international rule of law and the Fourth Geneva Convention. It's so obvious. But we're not allowed to follow the law when it comes to the foreign country of Israel here in the United States. 26 states have done it. But the issue is, in Illinois, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because half the Arabs in Illinois supported Rauner. Half the Arabs in Illinois supported J.B. Pritzker, who won the governorship and will take office in the beginning of January. Now, Pritzker is supported by many Arab Americans, and he's working with those Arab Americans to give them appointments to different boards and commissions, you know, to engage Arab Americans to bring us and make us part of the government, which I think is great. But I still think that those Arab Americans need to go to Pritzker and they need to tell him that he needs to repeal this ordinance, this law in the state of Illinois, which punishes anybody who criticizes the state of Illinois, even if Pritzker is one of Israel's biggest supporters. He needs to do that. Now, if you're going to get an appointment or a job from Pritzker, are you really going to go to him and say, hey, I want you to do something? I hope they do. I hope they can do it, and maybe they can use their leverage to force Pritzker to withdraw this and repeal this bill, which was passed in July 2015, introduced by two pro-Israel legislators. Why, you know, what does the state of Illinois have to do with a foreign country? What does that have to do with anything? It's horrible. They need to do something about that, so I hope they will act. But I'm not sure that's going to happen. And I'm not sure. And the reason is that, you know, Pritzker in 1998 ran for Congress against several, in a Jewish district called the 9th Congressional District. And he lost that election. But during the election, he denounced the American Muslim Council and called them terrorists because one of their board members supported Hamas. And he never really apologized for that. So when a lot of Arabs wouldn't support him in this past election, and they demanded that he apologize, he did apologize to a group of Arab Americans during a closed-door meeting, and there was no press release, and it was published, though, by one small online news site. But he just wouldn't even say he regretted it publicly. He didn't want to do that. So if he didn't do that, believe me, he wasn't going to, and he won't, in my opinion, move to repeal the anti-BDS law. And that, for me, makes it very difficult for me to support J.B. Pritzker moving forward. Anyway, listen, thank you very much for listening to the radio show. Again, I'm Ray Hanania, and you can get more information on the podcast, on my columns, by visiting thearabstreet.org or hanania.com. We'll see you in a few weeks. I hope everybody has a great Christmas. I hope everybody has a great holiday. You guys take it easy. Thank you for listening, and thank Mike. Thank you, Mike, for producing the show from Detroit. Have a great day, everybody. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to my podcast, which reflects my writings. I write a syndicated column about Middle East issues at the Arab News, Middle East Monitor, and the ArabDailyNews.com. And I also write on mainstream American political issues for the Southwest News newspaper group in Chicagoland. Check out my column archive at thedailyhookah.com or hanania.com. And of course, these podcasts at thearabstreet.org. Thank you for listening.